I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Dargone it, it's still hot. The hot voice of your local announcer, Tom Fitzmaurice. And it's time now for the food show. Every afternoon, we do something that, as far as I know, and I keep asking around, and so far I've never turned up an answer to this, is there any other place in America that has a radio show anything like what you do there, Tom? And I always answer them, you know, this is actually a one-kinder, and we've been doing it since 31 years. That's the whole show, 31 years. We've been every single day. And you couldn't pick a better place to do this, though. I mean, here we are in New Orleans, and we get a great connection with all of the people around here. And you can learn just how great a city New Orleans is just by asking a few questions around and checking into the restaurants that people like. And there are two names that come up. Tenny Flynn, I think.
And Gary Wallerman.
I think that's actually Gary Wallerman and then Tenny Flynn.
Is that it?
I think so.
Just one name, G.W. Finns.
Yeah, G.W. There you go. It's not called H.T. Finns.
H.T. Finns?
Wait a second. Is G.W. Gary Wallerman? I just realized that.
Yes.
Well, heck, Marianne, I knew that even, and I
don't
know nothing.
I never even put that together. No kidding. Okay.
Anyway, both of us are here.
And as I was walking in, the two of you and maybe the three of you were talking about the first time you were ever on one of our programs here quite some time ago. Is that true?
About 19 years ago.
19 years ago.
You had your reservations about our success.
Yeah, I want to hear about that. Tenny was saying that your first review was not all that flattering. So what do you say, Tenny?
I forgot, you know. Some things showed promise, so I'm glad we were able to move forward and surpass your initial expectations for us.
Well, and did I ever, because more than a few times I have said that this is the best seafood restaurant in the Americas, and I pretty much have stuck with that ever since, and I've never had anybody get in touch with me one way or another and say, are you nuts out of your mind? I mean, can't you see? And you know, well, no, all I have ever seen from you guys is great, fresh, there's a word here I want to use, but it's not coming.
Preparations.
You can have that one. Intrinsically, that's what I wanted. Intrinsically great food that all comes together. And when it comes to any point where you're stopping for a minute or two, you realize that this machine is working all the time. And here are two guys that pretty much get it going all the time.
Well, thank you for the kind words.
What's the story on the history of it? Because I missed that part of the program.
So Tenny and I both.
But, you know, before we, Marianne, are you over there anywhere?
I'm here. Yes.
His microphone is off.
Okay.
Yank it over to right in front of you there, Gary.
Pull it
if you don't. Yeah, that's a lot better. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Anyway, where were we?
So.
Or were we anywhere?
Way back in
the day. Whoa. What?
Way back in 1999.
1999.
Yeah. Tenny and I were both working at Rouge Chris Steakhouse at the time.
Yeah.
He was the corporate chef, and I was the chief operating officer.
Kind of a nothing sort of hack operation.
Yeah. Just pretty lucky to be there, that's for sure.
And, yes, indeed.
We both ended up losing our jobs within about 30 days of each other.
Hmm.
Yeah. So
how'd that happen?
Well, during my last year, the last year of the third CEO, I went from being the fair-haired boy to the living embodiment of the Peter principle. So
one of those.
It was not this being made redundant was not entirely unexpected.
That was
for me anyway.
Chris here.
I think it was
Ruth
a big
Chris
surprise
here?
For Gary. But,
pardon me.
You were here in New Orleans at Ruth's Chris.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we worked at the corporate office out in Metairie. Yeah,
I see.
So we both spent some time looking around to see if there are other opportunities for us. And particularly in my case, there wasn't really another chief operating officer job in New Orleans. So it meant that I was going to have to leave town. And
you know, as hard as that sounds to do, and I know that that must have really vexed you to get, you know, something going on after that, after whatever fabulous job you had. But try to get a job together having just finished a gig as a restaurant critic and see how easy that is to sell.
At the same level,
yeah. Yeah, having to be in that position at any time, I don't imagine is all that comfortable. And so after we did a little looking around and everything, I called up Tenney and asked him if he'd be interested in partnering with me on a concept. And he was open to the idea. And so we developed GW Fence.
And there it is. And you've got these billboards, these very easy to see billboards along the I-10 that just come out and say, you know, the world's best those aren't the real words, but
seafood at its seasonal peak.
Seafood at its peak, yeah.
That's
and that
slogan.
Is a fact. If ever there was one, I've never run into anything there but that. So this is not the easiest thing in the world to do, though, because just finding the fish has got to be the hardest part of all. Huh?
Well, the purchasing part is definitely a everybody always sends us the best of what they have. Because we buy a lot and we pay quick, so we're valuable customers. We still reject a lot of fish from people we've been buying from since we opened. It's just the nature of the business. They don't look at every fish we do, and we're flexible enough to move our menu around. So the final print of the menu is 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Mm. So
and
you,
we have to have
you
plan
still
A
do
and
that.
B.
Oh, yeah. The menu you have in front of you.
Mm-hmm. This one here.
Excuse me. Got printed at 2.
I know you can hear what it sounds like, you
two,
at home.
2 yeah. o'clock this afternoon.
So when we get back, something may have changed.
Yeah, that's not
really
the final print.
To be doing it every single day. That's a big menu.
Is it ever?
Yeah.
Well,
I mean,
and the wines that are listed on the back, we're able to keep the vintages current, which is hard to do in a wine list.
But you know, that's something that grabbed me at the very beginning. I'm looking over your wine list, and I'm just doing a mental calculation, and I'm thinking, I think they might have 200 different restaurants. 200 different wines on the back of the menu, if I remember it. But if you look at the back of the menu now, it's well, there's got to be at least 200 or 300 bottles here. But look,
not quite so.
But getting there.
There's a good sized list there, and kind of the hallmark of the list really are the wines by the glass.
Yep.
There are about 60 wines available by the glass, so that gives our guest a chance to really explore a number of different wines, different varietals, pair with the meals that they want to enjoy. So it really works well for our guest.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing about, you know, jumping ahead to the book you have there. We have
the book,
wine
yeah.
pairings, you know, with the recipes that Gary picked or one of our managers did, and you know, and he's got his. I don't know if you looked at his wine pairing philosophy there, next to his smiling face, but that's a big part of it. And you know, I think people are certainly more willing to try different types of seafood than they were 20 or 30 years ago.
Yeah, I've seen a few oddballs in there before.
And
they're more willing to try anything than they were 20 or 30 years ago.
And the same thing goes with wines.
How did the book come about?
Well, I've been playing with the idea for years, and we tried. Nobody wanted to do a restaurant cookbook. Publishers are scared of seafood cookbooks anyway, apparently. I certainly got that impression. Then I was going to do a book with New Orleans musicians, paired with, that was a kind of a crazy idea, but...
For a crazy idea.
The publisher didn't bite on that either, and I finally gave up and engaged a professional writer to write a proposal, who ended up being the co-author of the book, Susan Puckett. We shopped a 60-page proposal, when a lot of that made it into the book, and she was... She did the formatting. She did the, you know, moving stuff around. She did a great deal of the recipe testing.
Well, it was
but
not
I wrote
easily.
About 90% of the
yeah.
book.
The quality of the product that you're starting with, this is, as I mentioned before, that's if that were me trying to do that job, That would be the first thing I'd look at or worry about. The name of the book is?
The Deep End of Flavor.
The Deep End of Flavor.
It's a cool name.
It is a cool name.
It was picked by the publishers.
Hey, Gary, you get a little flack like this all the time, all day. That must be interesting.
So you wrote the book without a title?
We had two or three working titles.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And actually, it's interesting because my childhood best friend got to be the photographer. And I had a picture of he and I out in a cornfield passing a jug with long hair and packs of Marlboros rolled up in our T-shirts, which I really wanted to put in the book, but the resolution wasn't good enough for that. Mm. And the publisher had quite a bit of control. I know you've written several cookbooks, Tom, but with me as a new person, they had a lot of control over a lot of things. The style of photography, for one,
It's beautiful. I think it's beautiful.
I think it turned out very well. And it's mainly a technique book. It's not a chefy book that you put on the coffee table. It's a Don't Be Afraid of the Fish book.
I've listened over the years and been convinced that the most difficult recipes that you come out with routinely are these ones that you make for your lobsters. It seems like every time I'm there and I'm checking, I'm being looked at like I've just enunced. All people using the no, never mind. But where was I there?
Did you? You were talking about lobster. Although I don't know. Do you do lobster there?
There's a lobster dish that you have that takes. If I remember reading it, it just goes on and on and on, to get the thing put together.
Are you talking about the lobster dumplings?
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah, but that's not done easily, is it?
Well, it has a lot of steps. The recipe's in the book. If you've got a food processor, it's not that difficult. It's a whitefish mousseline.
Oh, that's good to know. It melts in your mouth.
Well, and we've served millions of them, I mean, since day one.
Mm. Well, it's working.
I'm looking at your menu for the culinary tonight, and I think, you know what? I haven't been there in a long time. And I'm thinking, when I go, I'm going to hurt myself because there's a lot of stuff that I haven't had that I have to have. Like the culinary menu looks great. Blue crab pot stickers, local brulee fig salad, crispy snapper belly.
The snapper belly and the fin wings executive chef Mike Nelson came up with, and it's really kind of his shtick. We utilize the whole fish, which number one respects the whole fish. Number two, it allows us to increase our sales on the fish. But he's come up with some really great dishes, really inventive ways of butchering, very tasty preparations.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got three new appetizers and three desserts that aren't offered on the regular menu. But the middle of the menu, the entrees, we didn't try to skimp on them. They're pretty much things that we ordinarily serve anyway.
Hmm.
You guys are one of the great crab cakes in town.
Mm.
Crab cakes. Do you get annoyed at crab cakes now when you go someplace else?
And if you don't, she does.
No, I do. I get really annoyed at crab cakes because they have, excuse me, but bastardized the term crab cakes. A crab cake is a lump of jumbo crab that's held together very gently with bechamel or something else, like I don't want to think about it, but pureed shrimp or something.
But mostly crab.
Right. And then just lightly sauteed where there's just this nice crust on it, but it sits up high and it's a big old handful of crab meat. Now what you get usually when you see the words crab cake, you get like a crab stuffing that is deep fried. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And I think that's not a crab cake. That's crab stuffing.
That's a crab stuffing.
But this is a real crab cake. This is like one of the best crab cakes in town.
It's the real thing. We need to take a break right now, and we'll come back with more of the food show after. First, please, this. All right. It's the food show. There's a lot of funny things that we get involved in our program every day. And a lot of things that are straight down the middle. And we have a couple of those with us now. Couldn't be more happy than to have Tenny Flynn and G.W. That would be, what did I say?
Gary Wallerman.
Gary Wallerman. Oh, did I?
Yeah,
I went the wrong one.
You said G.W.
Gary Wallerman and all of these fellers come from the restaurant that has been identified as the great seafood restaurant anywhere in the area. And if you want to...
give us a call, 260-6368 is the number. The book is called The Deep End of Flavor. This is their new cookbook, and they are here to talk about it. So the book was how long in the making?
Well, probably from start to finish, or from start to puttering around with it to finish, about 2 years.
Well, you have to test all the recipe. That's what
that
takes
is
so
incredibly
long.
Tedious. And I had to have home cooks test the recipe.
Oh, you
not
did?
Just
yeah.
Me. Oh, yeah.
You
it's
did?
Doesn't count unless you do that.
Yeah, it's and people that I considered good cooks, you know, I enjoyed eating their food, and everything had to be meticulously volume measured, and you know, we had to go over it and over it and over it. But the upside of that now it's over with is the recipes work.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think there are a lot of people that do cookbooks that don't go through that process. I mean, I've certainly followed a few recipes that you did. Mm-hmm. I do something wrong, you know.
No, I never follow recipes.
Well, I do the first time
so
anyway.
I can blame myself. Maybe there's a lot more cooks like me out there.
And there's a lot of stuff in there about, you know, it's hard to find great seafood. I mean, it's hard for us to find great seafood.
It's hard to find mediocre seafood sometimes. It's
well, and we talk about, you know, don't fall in love with one particular fish in a recipe. You know, look at the recipe, and there's several different types of fish that might fit that bill. Go to the fishmonger, the grocery store, develop a relationship with the person behind the counter, so they'll at least tell you what came in that day. And some of the ways of recognizing that, and you know, and for some people. You know, frozen sea might even be a better option than some of the fresh cases I see.
Mm. Let me ask you a question about seafood. Do you ever have an ingredient that you're just so excited about, like your favorite fish? If somebody said, what's your favorite fish, could you answer that?
I mean, it depends on the day. I mean, and we get excited about a lot of stuff. I mean, you wouldn't think I'd be getting excited about big soft shell crabs the middle
no,
of August.
No, I think everybody gets excited about that.
Because you know, usually by the middle of August, you know, we're tired of them. But apparently, this hasn't been a great year. You know, we get 66% of the edible fin fish in the United States come out of the Gulf of Mexico.
Is that right?
Yes. Yeah.
Wow.
Now Alaska has more tonnage than we do, but we have a lot more variety. So we get a wealth of seafood that. You know, we don't have to pay freight on it. We've got relationships with free divers that go out to the oil platforms. You know, talk about excitement. You know, we get fish that same day. I mean, the finest sushi bar in the world doesn't get fish any fresher than that.
Uh-huh. Do you have any fish that people don't see here that you say to yourself, you know, if only they could try this?
Well, and... you know, it's like people that say they don't like fish. You know, I defy anybody. You know, if we get a fresh, and it could be something, you know, as simple as a piece of sautéed sheep's head. Just put a little salt and pepper on it, dust it in flour, sauté it in butter, and brown the butter, pour it over the top. And I don't think I've ever given that to anybody in the world that didn't go, wow, this tastes great.
That's one of my favorite.
I bet my daughter would break your record.
I think a lot of people... you know, grew up eating bad fish. I mean, my mom certainly ruined fish.
I was about to say, there's certainly a lot of it to ruin.
Right.
Fish sticks.
Yeah, but Marion, to your comment, yeah, we, a number of years ago, brought in John Dory, which is just
from
fabulous.
Alaska. New Zealand. Not Alaska. New Zealand.
And many, many people here in New Orleans had never had that before. We had it on the menu, and now we've got a wait list of people that say, hey, when you get it in, give us a call. We'll come down to the restaurant.
I bet you get a lot of that. Do you have, like, a big list of people who say, when you get this in, call me? Do you have a person who does that?
We do have the notes, and then when that product comes in, then the person working at the front desk that day will be making the phone calls the guests. You know, a lot of times that doesn't work real well, though, because they've got plans that night.
Yeah.
And we may only have enough supply for 2 days.
Uh-huh.
And so sometimes it doesn't work. But we're making the effort, and certainly it pays off occasionally.
Yeah. What's your personal favorite fish? You have to say one.
Pompano.
Really? Mm. That's his, too.
And it's coming up, the fat, waxy white pompano is going to be on the market within about 10 days.
I want to ask you about that.
Okay.
Do I have time to do it?
Well, sure.
Okay.
Oh, mine's bluefin tuna.
Okay.
Bluefin tuna?
Oh, absolutely. Especially the way we prepare it.
It weighs, you can feel it, how much it weighs.
Oh, it's a great red wine
beautiful.
Fish. Oh, it's just fabulous.
Yeah. I like halibut.
Do you really?
I love halibut.
Wow.
Yeah.
I bet you don't like pompano if you love halibut.
Pompano's okay. I'm not excited about pompano.
Well, sometimes we ask people, you know, because if I'm bad in the dining room, because I end up recommending the entire menu. So you ask people, what's your favorite fish?
Uh-huh.
So if they say it's flounder or halibut, I'm probably not going to steer them towards the cobia or the pompano or uh-huh. the other fat, full-flavored fish. I want the big flavor, me.
A Dover. Mm. See, you know what? Did you ever hear that? Did you ever hear Tom tell that story? I'm sure you've heard the story about when McDonald's was testing their fish fillet, and their number one criterion for it was something that doesn't taste like fish.
Yeah, the deal was, so in the early days of McDonald's, they were having a problem on Fridays because of Catholics mostly, being right. speaking as one myself, but they can understand that. And they were looking for something to take the place of the hamburger in there just so they could continue being open. And they checked all sorts of things and cheese and all of that. But it came down to...
That's a long time ago, though.
Yeah, it's a long time ago.
Today.
But they said about the only thing we can come up with is this fish dish. But the thing that it needs to be popular among their customers was to have no taste of fish at all in any way.
I think they succeeded.
And they succeeded very well.
I have to say, though, I do like the filet of fish.
Yeah.
No, I'd like a milder fish. If it's got a little, age to it, or it's got, you know, but like I said, I'm not a gourmet, you know.
By the way, McDonald's has popped back from that. You ought to look at their menu now. It's different.
They've gone past the fish fillet. We have Stephen on the phone. Let's
Stephen's
Stephen
on the phone?
Sit forever. Hi, Stephen.
Stephen, welcome to the food show. Do you mind if we take in some of our callers?
Oh, that's great.
Thank you. Stephen, come on in.
Hey, how you doing? I remember the history a little different. 19 years ago, I think I was the last hire that Gary made.
Stephen's question or comment on my mic. Go. My headphones.
Oh, okay. You turn it up a little bit.
Anyway,
go ahead.
I was the last hire that Gary made, I think, from the original staff.
Stephen from the front desk.
From the front desk.
How are you, Steve?
I am great. I've had a quadruple heart bypass, but I'm fine. My initials are GSW, and I always wore monogrammed shirts.
Yeah.
And when somebody would say something to Gary about, well, how did you get the name GW Fins? He would turn and say, well, his initials are GW. Look at his sleeve.
and from what I was told, when my back was turned, you frequently told people you were GW.
You know, I could believe that. But
I had the ability, if somebody looked at the menu or walked by or from Arno's across the street, if I talked to them, normally they would come in and make a reservation for the next day. I just had the gift of gab, and I would bring all these people in that wouldn't have come in ordinarily.
Well,
but I will say I am not a fish eater, but of all the employee specials and all the specials of the night that I ever tasted, there was never a fish I didn't like.
All right. Mm.
Very kind. Thank you, Steve.
Well, there
you
go.
Thank you, Stephen.
This is the Food Show. I'm Tom Fitzmaurice. It's great to be here with you talking about food and restaurants and cooking and wine. Did you get any good photos over there?
260-6368
Good. Thank you for taking the time.
268 is the number. Do you guys still have your biscuits or whatever it was that you had?
Oh, yes.
What is it? Are they cheese biscuits?
Oh, are they still around?
The cheese
of course
biscuits?
They are. No, they aren't cheese.
What are they?
They're drop biscuit with a little bit of sugar in it.
They're delicious.
Yeah,
they're really good. Great. Once you start eating them, you can't stop.
The recipe's in the book. They're white lily flour, delicious and nourishing pork lard, sugar, and whole milk.
Well, that's easy enough.
Yeah.
I'll bet you go through gobs of those.
We do.
Yeah. Why did you start with a biscuit as a bread? What was the origin of that? Deep dark and secret?
No. Before I joined Ruth Chris, I was with a restaurant company that had a fine dining seafood division that I was in charge of.
Mm-hmm.
And as is the case a lot of times in restaurants, we steal each other's ideas, borrow each other's ideas. And so in this concept I was in charge of, we served the biscuits.
Mm-hmm.
And could see
those biscuits or just biscuits?
Pretty much those biscuits.
Yeah. So, the only concession I made was the shortening.
Right. Okay. So, I could see how warmly they were received. And so I told Tenny about him, and he agreed that we would give it a 6-month test. And we'd see what the guest response was after 6 months, and if we needed to adjust, we would, and if not, we'd keep serving the biscuits.
Did you know if they did anyone ever find out that you were doing that? I guess it's common, isn't it?
Well, sure. And I will say that the owners of that company had been into GW Fence. And they all enjoyed the biscuits as well, so it didn't seem to be an issue for them.
Okay,
either.
Good. What were you going to say, Tenny?
Oh, I was going to in the header to the recipe. I said, that Gary presented me with this idea, and I said something like, "Nobody wants to eat a biscuit in a fine dining restaurant." Boy, was I wrong!
Yes, you were. Those are good.
The difference
biscuits.
Between the company he came from and us is that we use white lily flour.
That's
which
the best.
That's
the best. It really
and
is.
That's why for Yankees me. Can't make biscuits.
Is there white lily flour?
White lily flour, lard, natural shortening, not a hydrogenated, shelf-stable, waxy sort of thing.
I just go all the way to butter, personally.
Well, you put butter on it, so you have both kinds of natural fat eaten by people for many thousands of years. Nothing artificial.
Uh-huh.
No.
Yeah, so what kind of lard is it?
It's a...
Lard is healthy. I mean, I know it's not healthy, healthier than margarine, for example.
Oh, God,
it's not been messed with.
Do you remember, nobody in here is old enough to remember when Crisco was developed by Procter & Gamble, that was a soap company. If you've ever gotten Crisco on your hands, you can't, hot water soap, you have to wipe it off with a paper towel. What do you think it does when you eat it? And that was touted to the public. Is it all pure vegetable shortening, much better for you? And then 50 years later, we find out that natural fats are a hell of a lot better for you than hydrogenated shortening.
Yeah, I wouldn't touch it.
So the lard is an absolutely natural fat.
Yeah, it's rendered pork fat is lard.
Okay. It's delicious, too.
It is.
Oh, sure.
Good and good for
we
you.
We got to know where everything is.
These things flaky, too.
I know. It's like someone...
And our
someone
pie crust, Tom, to your point, is half butter, half lard.
That works. All right. We will take a break. 260-6368 is the number. We'll be right back with Tenny Flynn and Gary Wallerman of GW Fins, who are here to talk about their new book, The Deep End of Flavor.
Who's laughing and why?
I am, but just kind of in general. Go ahead.
You are listening to The Food Show. It's a one-of-a-kind thing that we do every afternoon here on 105.3 FM, HD2. And it'd be great to have you with us at any of those places. And we're here today, and with us, Tenny Flynn, who is the executive super-duper chef.
Actually, we call me old chef owner now.
Old
Mike
chef.
Mike Nelson is the executive chef and has been a couple of years.
Yeah.
He's young and strong. Unlike me. I noticed we've both gotten a little bit gray around the muzzle since we first began our association.
And Gary Wallerman, who is co-owner of the restaurant, GW Fins. All right, what's the thing that excites you most about your menu?
It's the purchasing part and the receiving part, and getting when we get the pristine fish in. Also, we talked a little bit more about the about the way that we're butchering now. We buy everything whole because it's really the only way to judge the quality of it. And all the different ways that that we're using, you know, different parts of the fish that we used to, if we didn't make stock out of it, we threw it away. And Chef Mike has really come up with some really great dishes.
I was looking at belly, and I think pork belly, but you mean fish belly.
Well, it's the... It is a fish belly. I mean, the fish we get are so fresh that it's, and actually, that's the juiciest part of the meat.
Okay.
You're making faces.
No, I am making faces for sure, because I, like I said, I'm not a gourmet. Now, what is the fish version of what is it? What is it? Nose to tail? The thing with the other?
It's,
is it pig?
I mean, that,
so
that's
what's
really
the fish
what we're
version
trying
of that?
For. I mean, that could be.
I guess nose to tail.
That could be
too,
nose
huh?
to tail as well
for fish too. Yeah. Is that like a movement?
Well, like I said, it respects the animal. Mm-hmm. You know, instead of wasting a huge part of this animal, and certainly there's an economic motive that we have
of course,
as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, finfish has more than doubled in price since we opened.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. What do you blame that on?
Well,
shrinking supply, I would guess. Huh? Higher demand.
Maybe it's just because it was 20 years ago we opened. I don't know. But anyway, that we look at things a little bit more carefully in that regard. We've always used, you know, our lobster dumplings. We make a whitefish mousseline that the parts that don't, you know, the trim from the fillets and stuff.
I don't know. I don't want to think about that stuff. I just want to think about your
all,
lobster dumplings.
You know, it's there's nothing...
I
don't know. I have a different viewpoint as a chef. I mean, the whole part of the animal is good.
Yes.
You know,
even some of the ones that seem really nasty, like those
lionfish.
Listen to this, folks. Can you give us just a quick rundown of how those things work and why you might run into them and
well,
why you wouldn't want to?
They were an aquarium escapee about 25 years ago. They have 14 venomous spines.
Yeah.
Which can give you a really nasty sting. They have no natural predators in this hemisphere.
Oh, wow, really?
So, and they eat six fish for breakfast, and then they eat six fish for dinner, and nothing eats them. And they breed like crazy. The only thing that's keeping them out of the marsh here is temperature. They're fine with low salinity water. They're out at the rigs, and... They're more noticeable in Florida and Mississippi and Alabama, where there are recreational dive communities. The only way to harvest these fish is for divers to hand spear them.
Hmm. You've done a couple of almost like festivals on that subject.
Well, they just did a lionfish rodeo about 2 months ago, where they killed I think 14,500 of them or something. I needed some about 2 weeks later, and I had a guy go out and get them, and he didn't seem to have any problem getting me about 40 or 50 pounds.
Wow.
They are very tasty. So
oh,
that's,
they are? Oh,
that's
good.
The upside.
Well, that is a good side.
And the only way, you know, to control the population is to hand spear them. So, you know, it's something you can hunt it and
Golly,
feel good
that
about it.
Must be expensive then, huh?
Well, it's got a worse yield than sheep's head. You get about a 20% yield of fillet off the fish. So,
and if there's no predator and they can breed that quickly.
And yeah. they eat
and
everything
you,
else.
They're going to wind up depleting everything else.
Yeah, and you've got to catch them one at a time.
Yeah, yeah. Mm.
They've got the advantage.
Absolutely. I mean, that's kind of a scary thought.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's a good thing they're good to eat.
Well, but how have they decimated everything else? When did this happen? When was
about 20 years ago, and they've gradually moved around, and they're good at depths that we aren't. You know, in areas that they get a lot of pressure, they just go deeper.
Uh-huh.
They're out at the rigs. I mean, they're diving in Louisiana. There really isn't a recreational dive community because you have to go so far out to blue water, so you have to know somebody with a boat, basically.
Yeah.
And that's where our spear fishermen go.
Uh-huh.
And I've dove out there. It's a lot of fun.
It is far. I remember a first cruise that we took where we went for hours before the brown water and the blue water met in a line, a very distinct line. It was, we were getting, you know, into the Caribbean. It was really, it was a stark vision, I would say, you know. Yeah.
And we menu them whenever we get a chance. Generally, if I go diving in Pensacola, I'll bring back an ice chest. And, you know, I have a spearfishing license. I have a commercial license. We have a retail license. So they make you jump through a lot of hoops to do that.
They
so,
do, yeah.
So I can legally menu these things as chef shot, which
well,
is
good.
Kind of a PR thing. But
that's good.
It's fun when it happens.
I'll
yeah.
bet.
Yeah. Have you ever had to, I would guess that you probably have to educate a lot of your diners.
People are much more likely to trust us and go out on a limb, I think, with, we've menued some pretty odd things.
What's the oddest thing that you've menued?
Lately, we're going like, okay, we've got the fin wings, we've got
fin
fish
wings.
Bellies, we've got, Mike does the swordfish.
What a great fish.
It's actually where the dorsal fin goes into the body. It's striated like ribs. He smokes those like ribs. But the weirdest thing that we served lately was we split the head on about a 60-pound Warsaw grouper and did
That's a bottom feeder, isn't it? Is
no,
it
no,
grouper?
No.
No, it's a good
not?
Fish, but it can
that's
get kind of big.
But the head, the half head was about this big. We served it on a huge platter for two people. And we're like, oh, put it on the menu, see what happens. And they bought it. So uh-huh. And it's a great piece of meat.
Did you we know, smoke that or was that other
we hot smoke we hot smoked it like barbecue. And if you look
so
at
your barbecue days aren't over yet.
If you look at Asian cultures, they esteem the head much higher than they do the fillet. You know, it's like the closer the bone, the sweeter the meat.
In Europe, if you go to a restaurant and they haven't cooked the whole fish and have there's another name for these, breasts.
Or throats.
Throats. And it's from kind of, the way I understand it, right on the ends, the sides of the fish. And this is supposed to be where the most...
The sweetest meat is.
The sweetest meat. And it's very, the texture of it is very nice. I've had it a few times, not often.
I'm seeing snapper throats a lot.
Yeah, there are a couple places.
That's pretty much the same part of the fish that Mike makes the fin wings out of. Now, one thing that Mike came up with entirely on his own, developed the whole butchering technique, which, you know, collars or throats are very hard to eat because of the shape. They have a lot of bones in them. And he came up with a way of cutting them. So you just hold it can be finger food. You hold it by the fin and you eat it just like a chicken wing.
Uh-huh. Hmm.
All right, we have a caller. Let's go to Mike.
Mike, welcome. Hey,
is Mike.
Mike
there?
Mike, you calling? Are you with us? Oh, it's, it seemed
and
to
Mike has left
seems
us.
To,
oh, well. Mike, call us back if you would like to talk to Tenny Flynn or Gary Wallerman of GW Fins, who are here to talk about their new book, The Deep End of Flavor, which is a mighty fine-looking book, I have
yes,
to
indeed.
Say. I like the very subtle color of the... of the cover and the fact that it's embossed. The photography is beautiful, and I am sure the innards, the recipes and things are going to be great as well.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any easy recipes in there, guys?
Well, we start off, you know, the fish recipes start off very basically, just a basic sauté meunière.
Mm-hmm.
And then we sort of build from there. They're in different categories, and I've told people they're all simple, but, I mean...
Simple
for
you,
some people,
yeah.
Yeah, some people right. maybe not so simple.
Uh-huh.
But,
are there a lot of steps to all of the recipes?
No.
Have you ever heard that Joe Kahn, the late great Joe Kahn? Have you ever heard his
what a character.
Recipe for cooking? It's if it takes more than 2 pots, 2 hours, or two one other thing, he goes go out to a restaurant.
Yeah. Well, and you know that's and I talk a lot about you know. Organization of materials, mise en place, and that I do cook a lot of meals in one pot.
Mm-hmm.
And the object of the game is to have everything clean by the time I sit down and eat dinner. I also talk a lot about having everything else cooked and on the table and your guests seated before you put the fish in the pan. And there's some things that it's kind of like cooking pancakes for kids. You're going to be standing there cooking while everybody else is eating. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah.
But
there's a lot of that that
cook
goes
them
on.
Ahead of time,
that's the curse of being.
Especially the Fitzmaurice house. There's a lot of that that goes on.
Well, yeah. And I mean, that's the fun of being a cook too.
Yeah, yeah, that's it.
I've
got a couple more questions. We're not going to be. Well, we still have actually a pretty good bit of time here. Thanks for staying so long with us.
Oh, my pleasure.
We were talking about pompano earlier, and two of us said that fish is their favorite fish, at least two.
And well, that's you and me.
Oh, well, that's maybe
that's,
we ought to take
that
poll
then.
Over again. But I noticed about 5-10 years ago that the fish were coming in that were about as big as I remember, but nice sized, and you generally saw the whole thing being brought in. One place I saw that many times was over at Galator's. They would bring it in through the front door. Big, big fish. But more and more, I'm seeing these fish that appear to be just like pompano, but they're about maybe, 36, two-thirds of the size. And I've heard from a couple of people in the business that there are two kinds of pompano. And one of them tends to give out these small fish fillets, and the other ones, have the big guys that can feed two people. I've never gotten a straight answer from anybody on that. Is that for real, or is that just some bunkum?
Well, I mean, there's a fish called permit.
Which
looks very much like a pompano. Mm. The same family. It's in the jack family. The jack is a very large, and a lot of varieties in that family. They're market sized, and they're graded by size. And pompano has a 50% yield. So if I pay $5 a pound for a pompano, a portion of pompano of a pound fish, or a 2 pound fish, a portion is going to cost me $5.
Well, that's not too bad.
No.
Maybe that's it.
So ideally, in a perfect world for me, I want all my pompano to weigh 2 pounds.
Yeah, well, good luck.
So
with
I would get 2 8-ounce portions, but their size, they're 1 to 1.5, 2 to 2.5, something mm-hmm. like that. But I buy whatever I get my hands on because I like it so much that if I've got to get a 1 pound fish and give you 2 4-ounce fillets for a portion, that's fine too.
Hmm. Well, if you have any questions further out there, if you're listening to us, we'd love to hear from you. And
260-6368?
260-6368 is our telephone number. You can just get right on the phone and start talking with us. We'd be very happy to do that with you.
Let me ask you another question.
Wait, I've been asked to do this just a second ago. The name of the book is The Deep End of Flavor, and it shows a fish on the front. And it's a blue book, very nice-looking book, a lot of good photography in it, and I would recommend it a lot. Now, back
beautiful
to
book.
You,
beautiful book.
Chet.
So you, I asked you what your favorite fish was, and now I'm going to ask you what your favorite preparation is. It sounds to me like your favorite preparation is simple salt, pepper, and the pan sear. Is that right?
Well, on a pompano, I might put it on a grill. Nice fat fish on a grill.
Uh-huh.
And that fish is so good you don't have to do anything else to it.
Yeah, really don't. I just throw it on top and it's done.
Okay, so nobody's doing fried fish.
We fry some stuff. And there's
nothing wrong.
Everybody's doing fried fish.
I know. What I'm saying everybody is doing fried fish, but it's really it kind of is. It's not right, right? It's
well, it depends on the fish. I mean, they're fish that I like fried catfish. I like batter fried fish. I like fried fish tacos.
Uh-huh.
I certainly like fried shrimp and oysters.
My favorite.
And everybody denigrates frying. If you've got the right frying oil, the right temperature, the right product to fry, the right breading procedure, and you're frying,
Are we frying in lard? Because that sounds appealing now all of a sudden.
It's actually a pretty good frying medium.
Is it? Because I'm telling you, I hate the idea of these oils. So I'm thinking, I'm going to go get me some lard.
It works very well.
Uh-huh.
Does it hold up to the same temperature?
Yeah, it's
can fry fish in lard?
Oh, yes.
Really? Okay.
Okay.
But if you do everything perfectly, I mean, it's a very efficient way to transfer heat.
Uh-huh.
You know, it can be great. You know, but you can, if your oil isn't fresh or it's the wrong temperature, your breading is, you know, there's all kinds of ways to go south on that, too.
Uh-huh. And that was, quite honestly, yes, but does anybody fry fish? Because everybody does. That's kind of why we don't.
It's too easy, yeah.
Well, no, no, no.
Wait,
but
you don't do any fried fish?
Very little.
Okay.
Very little. And when we put the concept together, we said, okay, we want to open up a seafood restaurant. So are we going to present the same seafood dishes that are common in New Orleans now? And if so, how are we going to differentiate ourselves?
Right.
Or are we going to present something new to the market? Mm-hmm. And so that's what we hope to accomplish when we opened up Fins and more of the sautéing, wood grilling.
Was there ever a time in the early days when you went, when you were thinking, oh God, maybe we should have done the fried? I mean, was it a hard sell?
No.
Never, really, even the early days. No, really.
No. We had our
of customers, maybe, but not cooking preparations.
We never got any pushback on the concept at all.
No, I'm saying that when you had this concept 20 years ago, when frying was the thing and it was not, I mean, back in the day, you know, Mr. B's did the wood fired and all that. So, you know, there were people doing what you're doing.
Right.
It wasn't like just a wild concept. But was there ever a moment where, you know, business wasn't what you were hoping that it was and you were thinking,
Yeah, there were about 6 months of those moments.
What?
There were about 6 months of those moments.
But again, it wasn't.
Well, that's actually not very much. No. That's good.
It wasn't the menu, though, because we had really researched this concept for a while and had experience with it across the country. And we knew we're in the quarter. Uh-huh. We know that we're going to have visitors from around the world and around the country.
Yeah.
They've already shown a liking to this type of menu and these types of preparations. It was new to the market, so we hoped that the people in New Orleans would embrace the variety being provided and everything. And like I say, we've never really gotten any pushback on the concept. So fortunately, that worked. Now, 9/11... That was 6 months after we opened the restaurant. Yeah, that caused us to pause a little bit.
Oh, was it? That's right. God, that was long.
Yeah, yeah. So there were things, but it wasn't the menu
frying,
design. No.
It wasn't the lack of fried fish.
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
We're getting up to the end of the hour, but in the meantime, over here we have Steve on hold.
Not
Steve,
the same Steve.
Different Steve. Yeah. Steve, you there?
This is the other Steve.
The other Steve. Well,
we have
welcome.
Steve and Steven.
The real Steve.
Okay.
All right.
I got a just opposite question to Mary Ann. Is there any high volume local fish that you go, that is terrible? Keep that. That sucks.
Yeah. Get that away from us. Yeah. Are there any local fish that.
Not local fish.
Any
fish? Nothing. I mean, nothing local. Like you would say, I don't want that.
Well, I mean, if you mean by local, you mean locally caught in this area?
Yeah.
It's all good.
Okay, well, that's
Gasper Goo is not going to be my first choice.
Wait, what?
Me neither. Gasper Goo.
I've never heard of that. What is
it's
that?
It's a
freshwater drum. Yeah.
Okay.
Hardhead cats, not my first choice. You got to reach way down your bag of tricks to make them taste good.
What is the second one you said?
Hard-hit cats.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I don't even know what that is.
I like stingrays. I've had boat captains just raise all kinds of hell with me. Don't put that in my boat. And I'm going, no, it's good to eat.
Uh-huh.
Trust me.
What about
paddlefish?
I'm sorry.
I'm not crazy about Spanish mackerel.
You know, I could make you a believer. They got to be right out of the water and on the grill. A little compound butter, a little grilled vegetable, you would like
it. Okay. Yeah. Okay. As I said, I believe that.
I believe that.
But having said that, I like mullet. I like the
mullet.
The stronger flavor.
How about
fish.
Pogie?
I've eaten pogie.
Have you really?
Oh, yeah.
We did a
trash fish dinner one time where we even cooked needlefish. And ladyfish. I would not recommend ladyfish, but... almost
was this
everything.
Well attended, the trash fish dinner?
Oh, yeah.
It was a sellout.
Was it really?
Almost
absolutely.
Anything that I've ever got my hands on is good if it's fresh and you come up with a way to prepare it properly.
That'd be fun to do again. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you, Steve.
Well, I
don't want pogey, thank you.
No, that's not going to be my first choice either.
Uh-huh. All right, thanks
well,
a lot.
Tenny and
Gary.
And Gary, thank you for taking time out to spend with us, and good luck with your book.
Thank you.
By the way, I mean, as you can see, even from a distance, this is a well-put-together book, lots of photography in it, and the price is a mere $30. That's a really good looking.
That is a great price.
And if you come by GW
today.
Finn's and buy it there, I will inscribe it for you.
Oh, perfect.
Go to the culinary, which looks great, and then pick up a book. There you go. Because that's a great looking culinary.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.